And the cordless we can pass to you and Sister Lee. Yeah? Okay, we will start the usual puja. Sister Lee will help us to develop the recitation of the salutation to Namo Bunsu Sijia Mani Pho, then Namo Khonsu Imposa, followed by the Heart Sutta in Mandarin. Then we will start our Heart Sutta, the English version, followed by our Theravada Puja. Okay, we pay respect to the Buddha and all the worthy ones first, then Sister Lee will lead. Okay.
南无本师释迦牟尼佛，南无本师释迦牟尼佛，南无本师释迦牟尼佛，南无观世音菩萨，南无观世音菩萨，南无观世音菩萨。般若波罗蜜多心经，观自在菩萨行深般若波罗蜜多时，照见无蕴解空，度一切苦厄。舍利子，舍不异空，空不异舍，舍即是空，空即是舍，受想行识皆不如是。舍利子，是诸法空相，不生不灭，不垢不净，不增不减，是故空中无色，无受想行识，无眼耳鼻舌身意，无色声香味触法，无眼界，乃至无意识界，无无明意，无无明净，乃至无老死意，无老死净，无苦集灭道，无智意，无得已，无所得故，菩提萨埵依般若波罗蜜多故，心无挂碍，无挂碍故，无有恐怖，远离颠倒梦想，究竟涅槃，三世诸佛依般若波罗蜜多故得阿耨多罗三藐三菩提，故知般若波罗蜜多是大神咒，是大明咒，是无上咒，是无等等咒，能除一切苦，真实不虚。故说般若波罗蜜多咒，即说咒曰：揭谛揭谛波罗揭谛波罗僧揭谛菩提萨婆诃。
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. We will now recite the English version of the Heart Sutta. The Heart of Pragya Paramita Sutta. Okay, we recite together. Turn to page 1. When Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva was practicing the profound Pragya Paramita, he illuminated the five skandhas and saw that they are all empty, and he crossed beyond all suffering and difficulty. Sariputta, form does not differ from emptiness. Emptiness does not differ from form. Form itself is emptiness. Emptiness itself is form. So too are feeling, cognition, formation, and consciousness. Sariputta, all dhammas are empty of characteristic. They are not produced, not destroyed, not defiled, not pure, and they neither increase nor diminish. Therefore, in emptiness, there is no form, feeling, cognition, formation, or consciousness. No eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, or mind. No sight, sound, smell, taste, object of touch, or dhammas. No field of eye, up to and including no field of mind consciousness, and no ignorant or ending of ignorant, up to and including no old age and death, or ending of old age and death. There is no suffering, no accumulating, no extinction, no way, and no understanding or no attaining. Because nothing is attained, the Bodhisattva, true reliance on Prajnaparamita is unimpeded in his mind. Because there is no impediment, he is not afraid, and he leaves distorted dream thinking far behind. Ultimately, Nirvana. All Buddhas of the three periods of time attain Anuttaraya Samyak Sambohi through reliance on Prajnaparamita. Therefore, know that Prajnaparamita is a great spiritual mantra, a great bright mantra, a supreme mantra, an unequal mantra. It can remove all suffering. It's genuine and not false. That is why the mantra of Prajnaparamita was spoken. Recite it this: Gate Gate Parasate Parasam Gate Bodhisattva. Okay, we will start the Theravada Puja. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Dvitiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Dvitiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Dutiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Tatiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Tatiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Tatiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Panatipata viramani sikkhapadaṃ samādiyāmi. Ādina dāna viramani sikkhapadaṃ samādiyāmi. Kāmesu micchācarā vīramaṇī sikkhāpadaṃ samādiyāmi. Musāvādā vīramaṇī sikkhāpadaṃ samādiyāmi. Sūrā mīrāya majjhāpamādattanā Vīramaṇī sikkhāpadaṃ samādiyāmi. Sādhu, sādhu, sādhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to all the worthy ones. Okay, very good afternoon to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Just relax yourself, maintain some form of attention, then we shall start. Okay, we will start off with the notes, the short notes. Oh, I got two copies here. Anybody need extra? If anybody need extra, I can have this one. Okay, you turn to the short notes. 14. Heart Sutta class. come meditation class, date 27 May 2012, 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Okay, part one is recap and emphasis on the previous lesson. Within the conditioned world of life and existence, everything are conditioned arising, or they arise due to causal phenomena. You know, phenomena is anything perceivable by your mind. It's a phenomena. Okay? Whatever that you can perceive. It can be a movement, a vibration, or something that you can perceive through your consciousness. Whether seeing, hearing, smell, taste, tactile, or thought consciousness. The thought one is mental phenomena. Understand? The one you see, smell, and all those things, they have a combination. Mental and nature's phenomena. Understand? Then you can also see physical phenomena. Understand? Your physical body manifesting phenomena that you can come to perceive them. Like when you do your breathing, you do your four foundation of mindfulness. The first foundation, Kaya Nupassana. This one emphasizes a lot on contemplative mindfulness on the Kaya. And these are all physical phenomena. There are many physical phenomena within your form, your Kaya, that you can come to experience. That's why the Buddha said, if you truly mindful and aware, you will see the universal characteristic everywhere, in the midst of life and nature, in the midst of existence, even within your own form and mind. The physical form exhibits a lot of physical phenomena. The mental exhibits a lot of mental phenomena. And through your mental, you can come to see all of nature's phenomena. When we look at our physical form, if we are mindful, you just have to silence your mind. There are so many things happening within. What did you perceive within your physical form? What did you perceive? Apart from looking at the mirror, what else do you perceive? This is how you develop the wisdom, the contemplative wisdom, followed by the real insight into physical phenomena, the kaya part. You see, when you silence your mind, what did you come to realize? There are so many things happening in within your own form and mind, physical. Your blinking of your eye, your breathing, all these are activity within the physical. Then when you're silent, you can even feel your heartbeat, your vibration. Everything is arising and passing away. Understand? All of physical phenomena, the blinking of your eye, your turning of your hand, the movement of your body, understand? Your posture, your bending, your stretching, and whatever you do with this form, even when you answer nature's call, put on clothing and all. So these are all physical phenomena. And if you are aware and mindful, you can see them arising and passing away, arising and passing away. Then as you go deeper into it, you come to know all the vibration within your own physical body. You have your pulse of life, your heartbeat. Then all the vibration within your own body, your heartbeat. Then you look inside deeper. You see your mind, every moment the consciousness arises and passes away. Then every arising of human consciousness through your senses, a lot of activity of mind arise. And these are all mental phenomena. You see your thought come and go, your feeling come and go. Everything that you come to perceive through your mind, they come and they go. Every activity that you create through your mind, whether it's thinking, planning, trying to understand something or whatever, they also arise and pass away very fast. Then every moment of consciousness is also arising and passing away very fast. So if you have silent mind with the awareness within, all this you will see them very clearly. That's why the universal characteristic of impermanent, suffering state and non-self, or anatta, empty nature, is everywhere. For those who see, they always see. Yeah. But if you don't have the trained, heedful mind, silent mind, very difficult for you to see. You have to be silent to see the reality, to see things as they are, not what your thought tell you, not what you perceive. What you perceive is already not the reality. It's a conditioned state from your views and opinion. Understand that? Yeah. So perception based on memory is already a conditioned arising state of mind. Yeah. But when you perceive something, the reality, not using the memory, you just see it, seeing as they are, then the reality before the knowing is totally different from the conditioned world when you start to perceive it. The moment you perceive it, the thought come out, the mind come out, the aggregate become active. So your silent inner true mind cease to be. That's why, because you human being think a lot, they are preoccupied with a lot of sense activity. The mental is very active, and when your thought process, the mundane mind is very active, you are not heedful anymore. You are not in a state of inner silent awareness anymore. You are lost in thought, lost in the thinking, lost in the activity, lost in what you try to perceive or understand. And most human beings, because they lack wisdom, they react to what they see. That's why you have your like and dislike, your pleasant and unpleasant sense experience. And this will condition the hindrance of mind. Whatever you like, sensual desire come to be. Whatever you don't like, you will come to be. So all this like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant, the duality, they are conditioned by your delusion, by your ignorance. Because you don't have wisdom, you don't have equanimity, you want things your way. You are so conditioned to react to sense experience. So a mind that reacts to sense experience doesn't know how to stop thinking or calm itself down. So you need to have wisdom, okay? Now we go back to the notes. Within the conditioned world of life and existence, everything are conditioned arising. Or they arise due to causal phenomena, following the five universal orders or law. The Buddha called it Pancha Niyamas, namely Utu Niyama, Bija Niyama, Karma Niyama, Chitta Niyama, and Dhamma Niyama. Hence, they exhibit the three universal characteristics of Anicchang, Dukkang, and Anatta. Anatta here means non-self or empty nature. Anicchang means impermanent. Dukkang is the suffering state. The first two, Utu Niyama and Bija Niyama, they are scientific law, nature's physical law, and biological order. And the next three are nature's spiritual law, known as Karma Niyama, law of karma. Chitta Niyama, law of the mind. Chitta is actually the mind, the consciousness. And Dhamma Niyama is law of the Dhamma, or truth, as taught by the Buddha. So understanding these five universal order or laws imply we have right view with regards to life and existence. And this right view will enable one to have great understanding and wisdom of the existential world. Understanding Chitta Niyama will also enable one to understand how our mind functions, following the dependent origination or dwelling, the law of dependent origination. In Pali, it's called Paticca Samuppada, as taught by the Buddha. The children of today are the second generation kids. And nowadays, parents are usually overprotective of their second generation children. And they also tend to overpamper them in the name of loving them, hence giving rise to all the related social problems. This is especially common in families where the family unit do not have close relationship with each other. They usually lack harmony, and the family members seldom have the opportunity or line of communication to talk and discuss with each other openly, frankly, and sincerely to resolve their life's problem, like relationship problem, health problem, career problem, and financial problem, etc. Do learn to play your role as a responsible and good parent. We are cultivating and understanding the Buddha Dharma or the great wisdom as taught by the Buddha, then sharing them with your children to guide them through life. Your duty or responsibility as parent is to provide for their needs. The basic need that you provide to your children are what? Food, shelter, clothing, and education, is it? When they are young, but not to pamper them or be too protective of them. You have to advise them accordingly and then allow them to make their own decision in life, because it is their life, and let them be responsible for their own life decision, and never force them or try to control them in any way that will cause them to dislike you and don't like to discuss things or talk to you. I think that is the problem with most families. When you start to scold them, get angry at them because you think they are doing the wrong thing, you have a lot of fear that they may turn naughty or bad. They may mix it the wrong guy and all those things. I mean, it is something that most parents are worried about. But you must know how to apply the Dhamma to resolve their problem. Not by getting angry with them, not by getting what they call emotional over what they do and just lash out at them. Then sometimes the words you use is so harsh, you regret it later. Especially after they pack up their bag and left the house. The threat that parents always give is what? If you walk out of this house, you don't come back. You think that will work, huh? Most of the time it doesn't work. They just walk out. And when they walk out, you will have a lot of problem. Especially if your wife has a lot of love for their kid. They will come and talk to you. Why do you do that? Then, after that, the situation becomes worse. You don't know what to do now. So, human problem or humanity's problem, without Dhamma, not easy. That's why the Buddha knew. He talked about the Four Noble Truths. The Four Noble Truths are like secret of life. It explains to you clearly the reality of life and existence, both the conditioned and unconditioned. So when you understand the Four Noble Truths, these are truths that can make you noble one or enlightened one, then you like understand the secret of life and you know how to live. And the moment you have this wisdom and understanding to live life, your life changes. You become so happy, so peaceful, so full of joy. Then life to you is so meaningful. You got no more problem with life, no more suffering, no more fear, no more worry, no more anxiety, and no more unhappiness. Whatever arises in this world, whatever happened to the world, whatever people say or do, you are still at peace, you are still happy. There is still a lot of joy, and you can accept your children for what they are, And you will know how to play your role as parent, responsible, good parent. You will know how to actually attend to them, counsel them, advise them. You will never force them to do anything. These are good parents. These are parents who really understand and allow the children to have their space to live their own life. Your duty is to actually share your experience and understanding with them so that they do not make the mistake that is commonly done to people. Okay, so far for the first part, do you have any question? You have any question you can ask. This one is just to recap and actually help you to understand the full picture of what the teaching is all about. Because the Buddha's teaching is very simple. You can summarize it like that. We live in this universe. You call it what? Samsara, wheel of birth and death. So samsara is very wide. The universe is very wide. So scientists call it man and nature. Understand? Nature is everything. Understand? Things that are already there before us. So there is this universe that exists before us. So we are born as human beings. That's why man and nature. If you want to understand what life is, you must understand the laws that governs life and existence. Means the nature's law that governs all of life and existence. Understand that? So what are the nature's law? The Buddha, very simple. He classified them into five. He called it the five universal order. Or what he called the great nature's law that actually governs all of your life and existence in this whole universe. The first two, he said, these are scientific law. The scientists, because they know this law, they progress very fast. Whereas the Buddha is more interested in the other three, the spiritual law, that governs all of your life action. Who you are, what you are, the condition that brings you into this universe. These three spiritual laws, once you understand them, you are like the scientist who understand the secret of life. Then you become very powerful, very, very good and very skillful. That's why the scientists progress very fast after they understand these two laws. The great physical law and biological order of nature. So for us, the first law you must understand is the law of karma. That's why the right view is law of karma. Right view regards to law of karma. Then you know how to live. Because when you know karma is so important, you will know how to follow the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil, do good, and purify your mind. Then the Buddha said, the second spiritual law that you need to understand is the law of the mind, how you function as a human being, how all of your life experience come to be, how suffering comes to be. That's how he explained it under the Four Noble Truths. Dhamma Niyama is the last one. All of truth and Dhamma is the third nature's law that governs all of life and existence. So when you understand the law of karma, the law of the mind, then you will know how actually the teaching of the Four Noble Truths comes about. The Four Noble Truths talk about the reality of life and existence, noble truth of dukkha, suffering. If you don't have the wisdom when you confront them, suffering comes to be. That is the first noble truth. Then the Buddha said, whatever suffering that you encounter, there is a cause behind. So the second noble truth explains to you how your mind functions and how you entangle yourself and get into all this trouble, or what he calls suffering. Suffering means your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your unhappiness, your sorrow, your lamentation, all of the unhappy mind state. He called it dukkha. Then after that, the Buddha moved on. He said, there is a third noble truth that makes you feel much better. He said, suffering need not be in this universe. He said, there is such a noble truth that talks about enlightenment. The Buddha said, cessation of all suffering or nibbana is possible in the here and the now. You need not suffer. So that part is very, very convincing and very, I should say, promising for us as living beings. That's why you take refuge in him and his teaching and his noble disciple, because he can assure you that. And that refuge is true refuge, safe. Then the last noble truth explains how you can realize that enlightenment. There is a noble eightfold path. Is it? You cultivate them, it will lead to the cessation of all suffering. All of your life problem or situation or dukkha will come to an end. Enlightenment in the here and the now will be possible. So these right views of this spiritual law can bring about this transformation. That's why when you understand this, you ask yourself, it's like the secret of life. I understand this four noble truths. It can transform me to understand the existential world and to realize the enlightenment that is beyond the conditioned world. So both the conditioned and unconditioned world are all within the Four Noble Truths. That's why it's the secret of life. You understand this, you become enlightened. Then you understand life. You know how to live. No more suffering. Then the other last spiritual law, Dhamma Niyama, is to help you to develop this wisdom to become enlightened. All the teaching and truth that he teach fall under the Dhamma Niyama. Some they call it nature's occurrences because it follows this nature's law. Okay, so we finish off with part one. Now we go to part two. There is a big difference between emotional love, conditioned love, and metta, which is universal love. So these three types of love, a lot of people doesn't understand. So that's why I make use of this condition under the Heart Sutta to explain. Example of emotional love is the usual love-hate relationship of lay people. This one, most of you must have experienced them. Even you're not married also, I think you might have encountered some form of love-hate relationship. So this is like emotional love. When you have this infatuation or when you have this liking for somebody, you can have this type of emotional love. So this type of love depends on how you feel. When you have this, what they call craving and good feeling, then the emotional thing become like love. I love you because you are still so beautiful. You are what I expect. But when the beauty is no more there, when the true color start to surface, or then when they see certain things going the other way, then they start to hate the person. They start to get unhappy with that person. So that type of love is very emotional. Means one moment you can love, next moment you can hate. So this one is happening to the world. That's why they suffer. A lot of relationships suffer because of this emotional love. Then conditioned love is a much improvement over emotional love. So for emotional love is one moment they will love each other when things go their way, and the next moment this so-called emotional love can turn into hatred, envy, and jealousy. Then there are these other relationships between parents and children, brothers and sisters, daughter-in-law and mother-in-law, good friends, etc. They are expressed as conditioned love that only exists because of the bond, the relationship bond that you have with them. Whereas universal love or metta, just love, and there is no opposite to it. So metta is different. When you have loving kindness, metta, there is no negativity, no envy, no jealousy, no hatred. Because this is true love. You love because you have wisdom, you have understanding. That's why love and compassion simultaneously work as a pair. So when it comes to what they call conditioned love, means because of the relationship and the bond, you can sacrifice, understand not? Like your children, or your brothers, your sister, or your good friend, or your parent. You can go all out and sacrifice for them, understand not? And do a lot of things for them, without even have any selfishness. But this type of love is already very good. But to the Buddha, to the spiritual people, it is still due to a bond, understand? A relationship. If it's not my son, not my daughter, or not my brother or sister or my parent or somebody close to me or related to me, then I cannot sacrifice, understand? I cannot extend the same type of love to them, understand? That's why when you do metta, they teach you initially to love yourself, correct? Yeah? After you love yourself, then only you radiate. First is to who? Your loved ones, your teachers, people whom you respect. Then after that, to somebody neutral. And then the last one is what? To your enemy or people whom you don't like. If you can radiate that one, that is metta, understand? If you cannot do that, there is no metta, understand? Because your metta is selective. My enemy, I cannot radiate. That guy, you did that to me, how can I radiate metta to you? And then, this is conditioned love, understand? Of course, emotional is worldly, very worldly. So now this three type of love is clear to you. You got any question or not? Anybody got any question? Don't have? Okay, we move on. Okay. The mind that has metta is always peaceful and happy without any negativity. Always remember that. It is born of wisdom that enable them to accept the reality of the moment, and always at peace with the way things are. And their heart are always full of loving kindness, metta. Then there is definition of certain Pali terms. You always hear about this, samadhi. So samadhi, there are a lot of interpretation. But this is what I believe to be the more exact version. Samadhi is not concentration. A lot of people equate samadhi as concentration. No. It is a mind that is collected, unwavering and unmoving. A mind that is in concentration also can have samadhi, understand? Because it is also collected, unwavering and unmoving. But the other one that is in samadhi, born of wisdom, not born of a conditioned state of mind. That one is the real samadhi. That's why the Buddha talked about sama samadhi. He never says sama jhana. If jhana is equivalent to samadhi, he would have said sama jhana. No need to be so confusing. But why he used this term? Because samadhi is a very special and unique enlightenment factor. It is born of wisdom. So this samadhi is a mind that is collected, unwavering and unmoving due to wisdom, or what they call continuous awareness or mindfulness. So that when you are in the midst of life, when you arise a sense experience, when you see something, hear something, smell something, taste something, or feel something, or think of something, the mind is not disturbed. The mind is unwavering, unmoving, collected, This is the mind that has samadhi. But the true one is the final one in upeka, equanimity, born of wisdom. When there is wisdom, then the mind becomes stable, collected and unwavering. That type of mind is the enlightenment factor of upeka, equanimity. So the true samadhi, you have to develop the wisdom. And that type of samadhi, anywhere, any place, anytime, even when your mind is not concentrated, the samadhi is there. You will not become afflicted or affected by anything. Your mind is always at peace. With total understanding of the ever-shining, this one means your Buddha nature. Actually, our Buddha nature, the true nature and the true mind, the original mind, is always there. That's why it's ever-shining. It's like the sun behind the cloud, or the moon behind the cloud. It's ever-shining. So when you have this understanding of your true nature, you will know how to free your mind. You will not get yourself entangled with the delusion created by your mundane mind, thinking mind, or what they call the mind that has the grasping aggregate, the five aggregates of grasping, upadana khandas. The other thing you need to understand is the host and the master, which we use as an analogy of the innkeeper, the owner of the inn. So the host and the master, meaning you are the owner, you are fully in charge. Mind is at peace, meaning mind that is heedful, silent and unstirred. There is one very famous verse, Dhamma saying by Master Poyen Zhang Lao. I saw this from a booklet given to my wife by Sister Li. It is a very good poem. The Mandarin is Xing Jing. Xing is mind, Jing is still. Okay? So the meaning is still mind or silent mind. Wu Nian Shi Zhen Xing. The Mandarin word in the Hanyi Pinyin is in the bracket. No thought is true mind. This comes from the wise one, those who have realized, otherwise they cannot understand what the true mind is. So the Mandarin words has its meaning, very easy to understand. So when you do not stir your mind, when you do not arise any thought, then the true nature, the true mind, sitting as they are, the silent mind, pure awareness, nothing inside that. This is the one that has its ability to understand the truth and the reality. That's why you can see things as they are. Whereas the second line describes your delusion and ignorance. Tong nian, you know what is tong nian or not? You stir your mind. Ji wu ming means the moment you stir your mind or you create thought, that is your delusion, your ignorance. So the moment thought come to be, delusion manifests because thought is egoic. Do you know how you create thought or not? Last time I explained to you already. How do you create thought? You have been using thought for so long. Every day create billions of countless, and yet you don't know how you create thought. You are expert in creating thought. Anybody want to try? Try. How do you create thought? How come thought can come about so fast? Andy, you try. Pass the mic. Pass the mic. Push it out full. Push up to the top.
I think most of my thoughts or thinking is Towards wanting to get something done, or like can be craving, or can be
yes.
Chasing after something, or
yes.
falling up with something. So
how you create that type of thought? It's from your mind, is it?
Oh, of course.
There's a mental intention in there. You input something into your consciousness, is it?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's how you create your thought. You must understand how it come about. Originally, before you arise a thought, you are with your true nature there. Yeah, yes. Yeah, yeah. Let it be tried. Yeah, very good.
I think we always react, whether we hear or see or
yes. Your reaction is from your conditioning. Understand or not? The conditioned mind, because you have certain views and opinion. So this view and opinion will condition you to react. Understand or not? So the moment you react, there is a mental intention behind. Because your view is like that. You will try to discriminate right or wrong, good or bad. So when you cannot see things as they are, accept the reality of the moment, if you are not at peace, not in equanimity, that's why you create thought. Understand or not? And do you know how you create thought or not? I want to explain this to you. You listen. Huh? This is the don't know how many times I have already explained. You have to remember. Because this one is very important. When you understand this, you understand why thought cannot free. Why thought is egoic. Why thought is limited. Yeah. You see, before the thought arise, when you are aware, silent, with your true nature, when you are heedful, there is just awareness. Your awareness is very spacious, understand not? That's why this nature, the true mind, it can be aware of anything in this universe because the consciousness is pure, no content inside, just aware, understand not? That's why it can see things as they are. Then the sense door are open. Because the sense door are open, it can give rise to sense door consciousness, understand not? Upon contact of that mind, the true awareness, with any of the organ, okay, it will trigger of the consciousness. So the Buddha said, at the moment of consciousness, when you see something, example, whatever that arises in the seeing, there is only the seeing consciousness. Understand not? There is no one to see yet. No delusion yet. Understand not? The pure seeing, the pure perception. But how come the moment you see, like Eng B say and Andy said, you have this craving, immediately you react to what you see. Understand not? And that is the mental intention or the content of consciousness that you input into that consciousness. So before that, there is no delusion. But the moment there is delusion, you think you see. Because you think you see through your conditioning, your views and opinion, this atta react. Understand? That's how you input the content inside that consciousness. So what happens is, when that consciousness gets its content, it triggers off into a thought. Understand? Initially, it's spacious. Initially, it's just awareness. Understand not? Without thinking, nothing. Just sati, silent. But the moment you react through your conditioned mind, because at the moment of sense experience, in the seeing, it's only the seeing consciousness. You're only conscious of seeing. Understand? That's why you can still see things as they are. Your awareness is still very spacious. Understand? Still aware like that. But the moment you focus on something, what happens? You zoom your consciousness into like that person you see or whatever that your seeing consciousness is trying to see. So your whole consciousness or awareness become restricted to the point of vision, understand not? That's why you're no longer aware, understand not? And you are preoccupied with what you see, understand not? And the worst is, when you introduce your mental negativity, your reaction, your like and your dislike, your pleasant and your unpleasant, then your delusion, you react to what you see because you think this is a person seeing. Understand? And when you don't like what you see, you have ill will, aversion. When you like, there is this craving towards that sense experience. There's a sensual desire. Sensual desire and ill will can arise. And these two are hindrance of mind. So this hindrance of mind immediately come to be. So the pure awareness, the moment you focus, concentrate, input the content, this one become thought, understand that? That's why thought is limited. From a spacious consciousness, it is trapped inside this egoic mind. You know why it's egoic? Because the thought thing through this Sakaya Ditti, that's why it reacts. Understand? It has its wrong view, its conditioning. And you study Abhidhamma, yeah? There is what they call the seven universal that is common to all consciousness. Without this seven universal, consciousness or thought cannot arise. Yeah. The first one is contact. Then upon contact, there is simultaneously also the feeling inside. That's why this feeling is very important. Before the delusion, before the knowing, the feeling is just pure feeling. Understand? But because you don't have wisdom at the moment of consciousness, when you see something, hear something, smell, taste, or tactile, feel something or thing, you don't have wisdom. You only saw manasikara, not there. So what will happen? The law of dependent origination, say what? Feeling will condition craving, which is what Andy was trying to say. You have craving. Craving means what? Your like and your dislike. Positive and negative craving. Yeah. And also like Ingby tried to explain, you start to discriminate. Yeah. So this is how the movement inside the content of consciousness, because you are trapped inside. Understand? You are preoccupied with what you see, what you think, your emotional reaction to what you see. And all this is how you get distracted. You become heedless, understand not? So heedlessness come about when thought arise. Heedlessness, huh? So now you know why Boyan, your Wu Pingqing Sir, the great grandmaster Zhang Lao, he said, when you move your thought, when you stir your mind, Dong Nian Ji Wu Ming, the moment you stir, the egoic mind come to be, ignorant come to be. Before that, there is none. Understand? That's like Wu Nian. When you don't have any thought, when you don't stir, when you don't focus and concentrate, you just relax and silent. The true nature, the true mind is there. And that is the one that can understand things, that can see things as they are. That is the one that you must use to meditate. Understand? That is heedfulness. That is the true mind, the true direct seeing. Not using your thought. The moment you use your thought, you are caught in the egoic mind, the heedlessness, because thought has this tendency to be egoic, limited. Because thought is a product of what? Yeah? Product of your awareness, isn't it? Your true nature, isn't it? Now I will come to this part. This part very important. You listen. Our living beings, even especially human beings, we use a lot of the thought, understand not? Because we have these senses, we have this awareness. Upon contact, it triggers of consciousness. You input the content, it becomes thought, understand not? So you use thought to live life, most of you. Yeah. So what is happening? Thought actually is quite powerful. That's why thought can do a lot of things. All this external form, yeah, or whatever thing that you come to perceive, the universe, the planet, everything, they are the product of thought. Can you see that? This table, the carpenter used thought. The guy who go and get the tree, the raw material, all used thought. That's why this table is a product of thought. Handphone is a product of thought. Understand? The bell, everything that you see, you come to perceive, is a product of thought, including your human body. Through karma, you create. Understand? Karma is mental intention. Understand? The nature's law of karma. So, thought create all this. Means thought has higher intelligence. Understand? Than this table, bell, and all this. That's why thought can see all this. Understand? You understand? Thought can see them because thought has higher intelligence. It can create all this. But then thought is a product of what? Your awareness. Your nature. So that's why thought cannot see awareness. Awareness can see thought. Understand? That's why it's very powerful. Do you get the point or not? Your awareness from your true nature, you create thought, understand not? It becomes consciousness, understand not? So, when thought is a product of consciousness, then consciousness or pure awareness, your nature, has higher intelligence than thought, understand not? That's why it can see thought. Thought cannot see the awareness, understand not? It's just like this table. This table cannot see thought, understand not? But thought can see. That's why thought can see you. Understand? You are the product of thought. Understand? Everything that you come to perceive, this universe, is a product of thought. That's why they say the world of consciousness. Understand? Yeah. But when you come to understand the mind, that's why the Buddha wants you to reflect and contemplate what is going on. During the early day when I teach, yeah, these are the things I ask them to reflect and contemplate. I said, the Buddha taught you the five aggregate of form and mind. Huh? What are they? Rupa, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, and Vijnana. What are they? Form is two types. Physical form and mental form. Okay? Then feeling is Vedana. Okay? Then there is this what they call Sankara and Sanya. Sanya is your perception, your ability to perceive through your consciousness. The seeing consciousness can perceive what you see within your field of vision. The hearing consciousness can perceive what you hear within your hearing consciousness. So each and every sense or activity, yeah, your mind can perceive whatever that is within that sense or consciousness activity. So perception is also an aggregate of mind because the mind has this ability to come to know things through mental perception. Then you have activity of mind, thinking, consciousness, scheming, emotion, mental states. These are all within sankhara. Actually, sankhara is inclusive of feeling and perception. Understand? Because sankhara is inclusive of feeling and perception, the Buddha says sankhara, there are 52. Actually, there are only 50, the Buddha classified them. But including feeling and perception, it becomes 52. Then the last one is, what can your mind do? It can become conscious of things. Asana. So consciousness is the, what they call, like a container, asana, a receptacle. So whatever that the mind, the content of consciousness, like last time I explained to you all, huh? The content of consciousness means what you put inside the consciousness. Your feeling, your contact, your mental intention, whatever, delusion and all those things. So all this the content of consciousness is actually sankhara, understand that? Because vedana, sanya, and sankhara, they are actually sankhara. That's the reason why the Buddha always used this word sankhara. Sabbe sankhara anicam. All of sankhara is impermanent. He never say sabbe vedana sanya sankhara. He did say vedana anicam, sanya anicam, sankhara anicam. But when he come and describe the whole thing, he always say sabbe, all of sankhara is impermanent. And sabbe sankhara dukkham, all of sankhara lead to suffering. So this content of consciousness is actually sankhara. Everything that is moving in your thought, your consciousness. So you have to ask this question. Are they really what you are? Are your feeling really what you are? Are your perception really what you are? Are the activity of mind really what you are? Do you exist as a human being? Are you the one who is thinking? Who is thinking? Understand that? You arise thought in there. Is there a thinker behind the thought? All this you can understand when you meditate. That's why Krishnamurti asked this question. Is there an observer and the observed? Is there a thinker and the thought? Because every day you create thought, isn't it? So it's very logical to say, I think, isn't it? You go and find out whether there is a thinker or not. That's why the Buddha said, these five aggregate, rupa, vedana, sanya, sankara, and vijnana, you have to understand them clearly. You have to reflect and contemplate. You have to find out whether they are really what you are. So as human beings, we tend to have this delusion. We think the feeling is so real because you really feel them, understand? You perceive them, especially in your daily life and your retreat. The pain, the numbness, the suffering, the unhappiness. Then sometimes this one come and go, disappear. Then, if it can come and it can go, means it's not you, isn't it? Because if a pleasant feeling that arises, then condition seems to be, it seems to be that another feeling arises, maybe a pleasant feeling, but you didn't die there. So how can this feeling be you? Correct or not? If you didn't die, feeling is definitely not you. If feeling is not you, then how did it arise in you? Then who created this feeling? This is how you develop your meditative understanding. That's why this thought, which is consciousness and its content, and feeling is one of the content, understand? Yeah. Perception is another content, understand? Your thinking, your activity of mind, your mental intention, jatina, everything, is also the content of consciousness. And all this, they come and they go. And when they go, you didn't die. Means they are not you. If they are not you, how did they arise in you? That's why just now I was trying to bring you to the understanding. They are the product of what? Your nature, your awareness. That's why thought is a product of this awareness. That's why awareness has got higher wisdom or intelligence than thought. So when you understand this, then you will know why thought is limited. Then you know why thought with its content is egoic. That's why you meditate using thought, you cannot free. Because you can never realize the state that is beyond thought. And that's a lot. Because the state that is beyond thought is before its creation. And that's a lot. That's why you are the God nature. You are the greatest creator in this universe. You created all your karma. You created all your form and mind that come. And the form and mind is the one that create all this, what they call life situation, life experiences. Yeah. That's why you have come so many times, billions and billions of birth and death. You have created so many things. As a human being, every moment, every segment, you create unending, ceaselessly. Every moment of consciousness you create. When you open your eye, seeing consciousness come to be, all this vision within your field of consciousness, you created them already. That's why human being very powerful. Through your mind, through your thought, you can create a lot of things. So the question we need to ask is, if the five aggregate of form and mind are not me, because they come and they go, then how did they arise in me? That's why in meditation you find out. Then you realize, before the thought arrived, it was just pure silence, stillness and awareness. But because we got our senses, understand, this human body has this physical senses and the mental. So these are the six centers that create consciousness. That's why without this form, without this mind, the five aggregate cannot come out. Understand? So karma is what? Karma is the nature, karmic nature. Each and every one of us have our own karmic nature. That's why the Buddha said, we are born of our karma, head of our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. We are what we are because of our karma. So this is everyone's karmic nature. Everyone is different because we come, we go, we born, we die. Every life is a different life. And no two is the same. That's why this summation of all your action, positive and negative, becomes your inheritance, your karmic nature. And this is the one that conditions you into this world. Understand? So the form and mind that come, is not you. Understand? Karmically conditioned out for you to use, to live life, to experience all of life. But because human beings do not understand, they deludedly grasp to this karmically created form and mind, thinking that this is what you are. That's why you don't know how to connect through meditation to your nature, to develop this understanding of life, to develop this wisdom that can allow you to understand the secret of life, the Four Noble Truths and all those things. So that when you have this wisdom, you know how to live. The one that know how to live is your nature, understand now, with the wisdom. But this one cannot come out. It cannot live. You need this form and mind to live, understand now. That's why this form and mind, when there is wisdom connected through meditation, through the awakening or the enlightenment, the form and mind doesn't suffer anymore, understand now. Then you can say, this form and mind is like enlightened, but this is not you, understand? That's why no one attained, no one enlightened, understand? Because this is not you, understand? This is just your vehicle, karmically conditional. When consciousness separate, this form go the way of nature. And this form and mind is what? Condition arising. When consciousness come in, conditioned by karma, then this physical form, also conditioned by karma with all the DNA, everything. These two combine, then together with your karmic force, create the powers of life. And then this one animate into a human being. Understand? Then you deludedly believe this is what you are. That's why you cannot free. That's why human beings are trapped, sakaya ditti, wrong view with regards to this atta, or what they call self. When you do not have the wisdom, you will cling very strongly to your human form, to your mind, to the aggregates of feeling, perception, activity of mind and consciousness. The five aggregates become grasping aggregate. That's why only the enlightened one, they are pure aggregate, non-grasping because of the wisdom. That's why they won't get entangled. Otherwise, the normal living being, the puttajana, every moment of consciousness, the feeling is grasping. Every moment of perception is grasping. That's why the Buddha always say, upadana khandas, the grasping aggregate.
this grub stream will be there as long as there is no wisdom, no yoniso manasikara. So in order to free, you must cultivate that wisdom, that understanding, the awakening. And this is the most important. Okay? So far, can follow or not? Okay. It's a bit difficult. Okay. Today, I have to take more of your time. Okay. The next one, we move on to... Oh, wait. There are two more. That is, understanding means wisdom. So, the Po Yen Zhang Lao, your master, he has a lot of wisdom. That's why he can write this poem, very good poem, although only two lines. The title is very beautiful, Silent Mind or Still Mind. You go back and reflect deep into it, develop the wisdom. Okay, outflow here means defilement, evil roots, and delusion. In Pali, it's called anusaya. Anusaya is the latent tendency, the outflow of the mind. The eight worldly conditions, or the eight winds, or the eight pair of dualities are, we went through the Sutongpo poem, gain and loss. Wherever there is gain, there is loss. Before you have not. This one comes from my teacher, Ajayantra. That's why I like the way he teach. He always say, when you lose something, don't become unhappy and miserable. Because he said, what you lost is what you have gained. So, not so bad, isn't it? Before you have not. You come to this world empty, isn't it? Nothing. Then you gain them, isn't it? Then you lose them, isn't it? So why cry away? Why become so unhappy? So, wherever there is gain, there is loss. Before you have not. So what you have lost is only losing back what you have gained. We came with nothing and we go with nothing. Means when you are born to this world empty. When you die, you also cannot bring along anything except your karma. Karma is the only thing you inherit and take away. Apart from that, nothing physical. So this part is very beautiful. Then maybe I add in one very good saying. I don't know whether it's from the Mahayana or what. When I was young, I went for this type of swordsmanship type of movie. I don't know how many of you all like that one. I liked that when I was young. When I was quite young, I think 10 years old or what, there was one of the show, the swordsman one. I think it's Tu Long Tao. You heard of that show? Tu Long Tao in Cantonese. The monk, they were up there meditating, and there's one. They call, this one is, last time killed a lot of people. This guy is that that famous actors, they call Yi Fu. I don't know what you call them. Yi Fu means what? Godfather or what? Godfather, So the Shaolin monk caught him and put him down there. Every day they do the chanting up there. Then you know what happened. This guy, blind, but very powerful and very fierce. During the heyday, he killed a lot of people. So finally, after listening to all the chanting, he suddenly changed so much. Then when the day, all the enemy whose loved one has been killed by him, they want to demand his life. He willingly told the four monks, no need to protect me. I'm willing to die, he said. I have done too much evil karma. I should actually allow them to kill me. No matter how many times they kill me, it's still not enough to actually repay what I have done to them. And the reason why he said that was, he said, after so long of hearing the chanting, he come to understand one very profound teaching, he said. Because the monk always chant, he said, in Mandarin, forgive me. You don't know Mandarin, I will translate later. The monk always doubt him, is it? Lai ye kong, qi ye kong. Namo si zu he bi ku ku wei kong liu lei ne? For those who know Mandarin, you will understand. The English translation is, when you come to this world, when you are born into this world, you came empty, understand? The moment you die, you also go empty, means you cannot bring along anything physically. Since your coming is empty and your going is empty, then why do you so deludedly and so stupidly in between grief over emptiness? Understand? Namo si zu he bi ku ku wei kong liu lei. You grieve. You become sad and cry. You shed so much tears. You know how much tears you shed? The Buddha said, over the aeons and aeons of birth and death, the tears that you have shed is more than the four great oceans in this planet, is it? So you know how long have you been crying? How much suffering and sorrow and grief has the living being shed? And why do you shed them? Because you have delusion. You don't know that they are all empty. You are shedding all these tears over emotion created by your mind and your thought without understanding. That's why you have delusion. If you don't have delusion, people will understand. I come to this world empty, I go also empty. Then why do I have to grieve in between? I only need to understand life. Then I can live the happy life, the beautiful and meaningful life. I don't have to be angry and unhappy. That's why life can be very, very beautiful and meaningful when you have the wisdom and the understanding. So this part is something that I hope it can help you. So now we come to the second pair of worldly condition, the eight worldly condition. Happiness and sorrow. If you cling to happiness, sorrow will be the result, because this is a worldly condition, understand? You cling to happiness means what? You cling to what you like, what you desire. But like the Buddha said, there is the universal characteristics of impermanent. Everything that is condition arising, they will cease to be, they will change. And when they change, if you have attachment and clinging, what happens? Your happiness is gone. You become miserable. You become afflicted. Like your loved one. Wow, you love them so much. Your wife, your children, your brothers and sisters, your good friend, all things. When they are around, when they are having the good health and the good condition to be with you, there is so much happiness and joy, especially when you have the financial freedom to actually have the good life. But the moment these things change, what happens? Because you attach, you cling. That's why the Buddha said, these are the worldly condition. You will confront them. If you cling to happiness, sorrow will be the result, because it is a worldly condition. Likewise for praise and blame. Wherever there is praise, there will also be blame. Then fame and ill fame is the same. So the note there is very important. Do not cling or do not attach. That is the key. You can have them. Happiness you can have. Whatever that come through the nature's condition for you to own and have, use them wisely, appropriately. But do not attach. Like your loved one came to you through condition, love them with all your heart. But if something happened, don't attach. Free your mind. So, to the eight world, do not cling to the eight worldly condition and understand the importance of equanimity, enlightenment factor to free your mind. Okay, meditation, part three. The deeper state of meditation, to allow the stillness and cessation to develop and stabilize. The two main purposes of meditation are to stabilize the dhyana or silent and tranquil heedful mind via a combination of relaxation, clear awareness, wisdom and understanding. Yeah. So if you know how to relax, if you know how to develop the silent mind through your clear awareness, then if you know how to stabilize your wisdom and understanding, your meditation will progress very fast. Yeah. Then the second purpose is to use this still or quiet mind or silent mind or tranquil mind to investigate clearly into the Dhamma and phenomena, means the universal characteristic, both internally and externally within life, to realize the wisdom and the enlightenment needed to free the mind. Internally means within your consciousness. Externally means external phenomena. Yeah? Physical, mental, and nature's phenomena. Mm. Okay, the other part you will listen to the tape, is too long. Bertio sharing of his cultivation and how he came out into the private sector to test himself in 1989. For details, please listen to the recording. In the 14 Heart Sutta sharing. Okay, we finish this. Maybe we quickly go into this, what they call Heart Sutta. We will continue. 29, we stop at page 29. So now, that day we only read to you the poem. You're supposed to go back and read. How many of you really read? Nobody. You have to maybe put in a little bit of effort to actually at least try to understand before you come, so that you can benefit more, you can receive more. Okay, we quickly go through. When Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva was practicing the profound Prajnaparamita, this is the opening statement of the Heart Sutta. Then the verse by Master Swayam Hua is, practice the way, cultivate yourself, and do not search outside. That's why you remember, Hui Guang Fan Zhao, reverse the light and be aware within. The prajna of your own nature is the deep and secret cause. White billow soar to the heaven, the black wave sees. Nirvana, the other shore, effortlessly is climbed. That's why without effort, without any movement of thought. Time and again, time and again, don't miss the chance. Care for it, be diligent, take hold of the divine innocence. Unclear mirage, thus the news arrive. Now it is there, now it is not. See what is originally esteemed. So you turn to the next page. The commentary will start to explain to you what the verse are. The word practicing in the sutta is simply what we understand as cultivation. As to profound, it is the opposite of superficial. Prajna means wisdom, and paramita means to reach the other shore. There is another meaning. Perfection is also paramita. The text said that Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara cultivates profound, not superficial, prajna. What is profound and what is superficial? Profound prajna is wonderful wisdom. Superficial prajna is limited to an understanding of the four truths and the 12 links of the condition causation or paticca samuppada. Here the spelling is different because it's in Sanskrit, as studied in the Theravada tradition. But only the wonderful wisdom of prajna or profound prajna can cause you to actually reach the other shore. Who is it who can arrive at the other shore? Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva. Who is it who can arrive at the other shore? Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva. When Sakyamuni Buddha spoke this sutta, he took special note of the great Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara, who practiced profound prajna and who has already reached the Adesha. Thus the Sutta said, when Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva was practicing the profound prajna paramita, those of the two vehicles, arahats and conditioned enlightened one. You know, arahat is arahan. The conditioned enlightened one, you know who they are not. They are the Pacheka Buddha. The Pacheka Buddha. They arise and become enlightened, not through hearing the Four Noble Truths, through contemplating the 12 link dependent origination. That's why they call conditioned enlightened one. Are unaware of profound prajna and cultivate only superficial prajna, which is concerned with the analysis of emptiness. In this contemplation, they make a very fine analysis of all form dharma and mind dharmas. What are form dharmas and mind dharma? Form dharmas are perceptible. These are mental form, isn't it? Perceptible means you are able to perceive them. While mind dharma are not. So, external form, you can perceive them. Understand? Like color, shape and form, through your seeing consciousness, you can perceive them. The Buddha image. Then you can perceive through your hearing consciousness what I speak, all this vibration. So these are all form dharma. Just give me a minute. I have to off this phone. Sorry for the interruption. Yun Chan just called. Okay. To make the distinction even clearer, everything that has perceptibility characteristic and is conditioned is said to possess form. So now you know what is mental form. Anything perceivable by the mind is a phenomena, is a mental form. Since mind dharma are not perceptible, they can only be recognized as a kind of awareness. That's why the mind dharma is different. The mind dharma are your thought, understand not? Only the awareness can be aware of them, understand not? Because they are the product from the awareness, which has the higher intelligence. That's why they can create thought, understand not? Thought is a product of that nature. That's why last time I always asked them this question, the five aggregate of form and mind. If they are not you, why did they arise in you? How come they arise in you? You go back and reflect and contemplate, then you will know. I just give them a hint. They are the byproduct from something. That's why it's not you. It's a byproduct. From that thing that created it. So that part is very important. I have to bring you into this, otherwise you cannot understand this Heart Sutta. Since mind dharma are not perceptible, they can only be recognized as a kind of awareness. See? Awareness is your mindfulness, sati. The fact that an awareness lacks any perceptible characteristic indicates that it is a mind dharma. Well, what has perceptible characteristic but lack awareness is called a form dharma. So now you can understand the two are very different. Form dharma make up of the first of the five skandhas. Remember the five aggregate? The first one is what? Rupa. Rupa got two type. The first aspect is as a human body, understand? This rupa, this human form, human body is also the form. Then you have a mind. The mind that has this aggregate, or what they call ability to feel, to perceive, to arise thought, to arise all the thinking, the planning, the scheming and all those things, the activity of mind, and to become conscious. That's why these four mental aggregates together with the physical form becomes the five aggregates of form and mind. And this is the first aspect. This is what you are, who you are as a human being. This is not your true you, understand? This is the fake one, understand? This one can die, understand? The real one never die. So this fake one, don't go and hold on to it. Because it's never the true one. So you cling to the fake one. Then you have the second aspect. Because within every moment of consciousness, there is also the five aggregate of form and mind. So how does the form enter the mind? Huh? How does the form? Through perception. You come to perceive the external form. All these are the form dhamma. Understand now? That's why if you do not have the ability to see beyond form, means you are caught in the form dhamma. You remember last time, Hui Ning? Yeah? We went through the flag. The two monks, Samanera, were arguing. One said the flag move. The other one said the wind move. So who is right? Huh? Who is right? Who is right? Flag move or wind move? That's why Hui Ning, very smart, he said, your mind move. Why did he say your mind move? Huh? Because your mind perceive it, understand or not? Because these two, the Samanera, they still cannot understand form, understand or not? The form dhamma, the perceptible form, external form, they are still deluded. They still cling on to it, understand or not? That's why there is a flag and the wind. These are the form dhamma. So the Buddha said, if you cannot see form, you cannot see mind. Understand not? Your mind is imperceptible, non-tangible. Understand not? Whereas this outside, external form, you can perceive them. Understand not? That's why thought can see them. Understand not? Perceptible. So these are the form dhamma. So when you have this understanding, the Buddha said, if you cannot see form, and you cannot see the condition arising nature of form, means you cannot see its impermanent, its suffering state and non-self, then you cannot see beyond form. Understand? Then form constantly trap you. Understand? You will be deluded by form. Not until you can see form, understand the unreality of form, the condition arising nature of form, the emptiness, empty nature of form, the anatta nature of form, then you can break free to reach the mind. Then you will move to the mind dhamma. Understand? If you cannot see form, you cannot see mind. So that's why Hui Ning, he already gone beyond thought, beyond mind. But why did he tell the monk, your mind move? Because he wants them to contemplate, to trace back the origination factor. How do you come to perceive form? Through your mind, is that? Through your consciousness, is that? That's why when you cannot see form, the unreality of form, then you cannot see mind. So when he say your mind move, you will go back and reflect and contemplate. Why did Hui Ning say that? Then you start to reflect. How do I know something? I know it through consciousness, that through mind, that through thought, that. So that's why you trace to the mind. Oh, like the Buddha said, mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. When mind arises, everything comes to be. Now, then I start to understand all this form, external form, they are not real. Why are they not real? Huh? Like this table. Very solid, isn't it? You sure say it's very real, isn't it? But the Buddha says it's not real. Because you never ask the question, how do I know this table? The knowing comes from what? Through your perception, isn't it? You bring this form into your mind, isn't it? And how real can that image be? Whatever you come to perceive is a mental image of this one. Externally is already condition arising, understand that? Causal phenomena. It come and it go. Because of condition is here. Condition cease to be, disappear. So externally not surreal, condition arising. But how do you come to know? Through your thought. Just an image, even more unreal. Then why do you cling onto it? Why do you hold onto it? That's why you cannot see form. You cannot see mind. You cannot trace back how you come to know. All of knowing comes from mind. That's why the Buddha said, our mind is very important. The forerunner of all things, mind is chief. If you want to go beyond thought, beyond mind, then you have to silence your this thinking mind so that it can connect back to your true nature. That's how, from the external world, phenomenal world, you have to return all of external form Dhamma back to my Dhamma. Understand? My Dhamma back to consciousness or awareness. Understand? Then awareness back to the wisdom which is emptiness. This is how you create. From the nature you come out. Through awareness you create the form of mind. The mind, the thinking mind, the mundane mind that actually spin you in samsara. Then through this mundane mind, thinking mind, you created the world and the universe, the form Dhamma. So all of this creation that you create, you have to return them. When you return all of external form to mind, then you come to understand how they arise, how they come to be. Then when you see this, you are no longer deluded by form, understand not? That's how you will come to know. The world, the universe, is a world of consciousness. Without mind, the universe don't exist. Correct or not? To me, to you, without your mind, you don't exist. The universe don't exist. That's why the world, the universe, is a world of consciousness, understand not? The mind, understand not? Then when you return all of this mind to your true nature, that everything that your mind created, your views, your opinion, your whatever reaction, emotion and all things, everything that you created is all empty. That's why when you return all of external form to mind to awareness, then of course they say back to emptiness. But there is no such thing as real emptiness because the emptiness is wisdom. That's why zhen kong miao yu. True emptiness is wonderful existence because you have wisdom. Prajna. Paramita. So this is the part that will let you understand the difference between form Dhamma and mind Dhamma. So very important to understand how your mind comes to be, how it creates, and how you come to perceive all this form Dhamma. Form Dhamma make up of the first of the five aggregate, the rupa. While feeling, perception, cognition is perception. Formation is activity of mind, sankara. And consciousness is consciousness. The remaining four skandhas are all mind dhammas. They are at the mind level. So they lack perceptible characteristic. Therefore, when Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva was practicing the profound prajna paramita, he illuminated the five skandhas, the five aggregates, and saw that they are all empty. This is very important. So we quickly go through this, so that at least you have some understanding of emptiness. To talk about prajna is to talk about emptiness. Fundamentally, there are many kinds of emptiness. But now for simplicity's sake, I will explain the five basic kinds of emptiness. This is Master Xuanhua's commentary explanation. This is how the Mahayana explain it. The first type of emptiness is insensate emptiness. This kind of emptiness lacks any knowing consciousness. It has no awareness. This emptiness, the ordinary emptiness known to most people, is called insensate emptiness because it consists merely of an emptiness we can see with our eyes, means empty space, and it lacks its own awareness. It is the false insensate emptiness people see in places when there is nothing at all. The lack of anything in a place is not the true emptiness. So this one is more of the mundane way of expression. when you say my room is empty, means there is nothing that you can see inside. But is it really empty? Yeah? Is your room really empty? Because there is still air, huh? Unless you take out the vacuum, huh? To vacuum it out. Then there is still something inside. Huh? They say ether, energy, or whatever. Okay? So there is no such thing as true emptiness in the physical sense. Then the second type is emptiness of annihilation. These are the wrong view. This is emptiness as it has been understood by those of certain external power, none of whom understand the principle of true emptiness. They say that when people die, they cease to exist. That is, they are annihilated. That's why they commit suicide. Everything finished. No more. But it doesn't end. And so their version of emptiness is called the emptiness of annihilation. These two are more mundane. But the third one is what the Theravada, they reflect and contemplate. The emptiness of analyzed Dhamma. This emptiness is a contemplation cultivated by those of the Theravada tradition. They analyze form as form, mind as mind, and sort them into their constituent Dhamma without realizing that they are all empty. They only go as far as to say that because a perceptible characteristic can be analyzed as one of the various form Dhamma, that because feeling, cognition, formation, and consciousness are analyzed in terms of the various mind Dhamma, they are empty. As a consequence, those of the two vehicles are not certified as one who have accomplished the wonderful meaning of true emptiness. They stop at the transformation city. This is very interesting. You know what is a transformation city or not? They stand there at that empty and false place. They see like a real city, but actually it's still a transformation one. It's not the real one yet. So you read the note. The enlightenment of the two vehicles, the Arahants and the Pacheka Buddha, the conditioned enlightened one, is compared to a city conjured by magic that has no real existence. The source of the well-known image is the Dhamma Flower Sutta. In Pali is Sutta Mapudaraka Darika Sutta. A reference to the same analogy is found further on in the verse commentary. Partial truth with residue is just a conjured city. You see, here you must understand how the Mahayana explained. So don't feel offended even though we start from Theravada. It's like you try to compare the Arahant and the Pacheka Buddha's enlightenment as not so superior to those of the Buddhas or the Bodhisattva. Actually, it's not meant to be that way. So you don't misperceive them. Otherwise, a lot of Theravada are very unhappy. Then they try to argue with it. The Buddha is also the Arahant. Because we all chant, isn't it? Iti peso bhagava arahang. He is also the Arahant. So why you say Arahant not enlightened yet? He said, the Buddha make it very clear, Arahant no more ignorant, no more rebirth. They recognize that, Mahayana. No more rebirth. That segmented form and mind, you don't come back anymore. But then, there is still an outflow. And that is where the mundane mind and the supramundane mind, the difference in the cultivation. I will go into it later. They will explain it also. Then you will understand it better. So at the moment, just let things be. Don't be too eager to comment. They stand there at the empty and false place, cultivating the contemplation of the emptiness of analyzed Dhamma. That is what is called a superficial prajna, not profound prajna. Cultivator of superficial prajna can end birth and death of their delimited segment. You know this word is, you know what is a segment, is that? One segment, one segment. you must understand this. This one is very important. So that you are not deluded. So that you don't like gullibly follow all those people who go and make the not so appropriate comment. Okay. You see, as a human being, we are born, let's say for aeons and aeons and aeons of birth. Let's say every of these is your birth, your birth and death. Okay? So this is, let's say, this life. This life. This one is your previous life. Previous. Then all these are your earlier life. Earlier life. You see, let's say this one, you are a human being. Human being. Let's say this one, you are a deva. Not so bad. Okay. Then this one, maybe, I don't know. We just assume, animal. Okay. Animal, you don't quite like it. Then, maybe one of the next life or the earlier life is Peta or Asura. Asuras are demons. So there is so many possibilities. Even animal, you can be chicken, you can be monkey, you can be dog or whatever. We don't know. This is what he called the delimited segment. You come and take birth. Each and every of this life is one segment of your life. Understand that? So I ask you a question. Who are you? Is the human being you? Is the deva you? Is this animal, the various animal that you take birth you? Or when you are peta, are they really you? Asura. That's why each and every segment that you come, when you take birth, you cannot deny you are all this. Correct or not? Are they really you? When I say human being, you say, yeah, this is me. When you say animal, not likely. Beta, are you? I don't think so. So all this, you will try to maybe use your mind to justify. But what I'm trying to show you is what the Mahayana has this to explain. Here is very beautiful, is it? Cultivator of superficial prajna means the arahat and the conditioned enlightened one, the Pacheka Buddha. They can end birth and death of the delimited segment, means this segmented body. In Mandarin is called fen tuan, share section. So no more rebirth, understand not? Because delusion and ignorance severe. All the 10 factors gone. That's why you don't come back and take birth. But there is still an outflow. So we will read on. But they are unable to transcend the birth and death of fluctuation. This is the one. There is still the outflow, the birth and death of your mundane mind, the thought. But because they have this wisdom, at the moment of death, the last thought moment, no more delusion, no more ignorance. That's why they don't have rebirth consciousness, understand not? They can still realize Nibbana, understand not? But this one, according to the Mahayana, is not the real. Actually, that word not so good. You say not the real, they feel offended. It's also enlightenment, but not the perfect one. That's why it is superficial enlightenment or prajna, wisdom, not the profound or perfect. So this birth and death of fluctuation, Yeah? In Mandarin is called what? Bian Yi. Bian Yi. What is meant by these two kinds of birth and death? The first refer to the body, means the segmented body. And the second refer to thought. That's why the Arahant and the Pacheka Buddha, they still got this thought outflow. Understand? Not? Birth and death of this thought still got. But they don't have ignorance anymore. But the Bodhisattva is different. If you cultivate until you very, very near the end, you actually no more mundane mind. That so-called gross mundane mind that create this outflow of birth and death of this thought, actually that one can collapse, cease. Then the supramundane mind from the true nature come out. There is another mind. They live with that mind. The Bodhisattva and the Buddha, they live with that type of mind. That's why they don't have outflow. This is where they explain the difference. But normal people cannot understand. Even the normal enlightened being cannot understand. You must go that way, the Bodhisattva way, to understand this. So this part is very important. So the body is a share and one lifetime, see? Segmented one lifetime, from birth to death is called a section, or a segment. It could also be said that everyone has his own form section. You are the 5 feet tall, he is 5 feet six, and that person is 6 feet tall. Each person has their own segment, or own section. So this is the birth and death of one of the share section or delimited segment. This type of death, Arahant, Pacheka Buddha, no more. Understand? No? Means they don't have to come back and take rebirth anymore. They really enlightened. But when they are Arahant, there is still this outflow of thought. And that one never ceases. The Holy One of the fourth stage of Arahantship, means the fourth stage of sainthood, the Arahant, has ended the birth and death of the delimited segment. This is the part. Means they don't take birth anymore. Understand? The segmented life, they don't come back anymore. But they have not yet end birth and death of fluctuation. This is the difference. Fluctuation refer to the transformation which are the source of birth and death of the eliminated segment. Because the birth and death of fluctuation refer to nothing more than all the various false thought. Means that thought, the mundane mind, still there, doesn't cease. But they got no more ignorance, no more delusion. That's why they don't have rebirth consciousness. The false thought flow along. One thought ceases to exist, and the next thought is born. Then that thought ceases to exist and the third one is born and so forth. That's why that thought still proliferate. That kind of successive production and extinction is also a kind of birth and death. Understand not? They have not finished that type of birth and death. So at the fourth stage of Arahantship, false thinking has not been extinguished entirely. Actually, it's not false thinking because they don't have delusion already. But this thought, the mundane mind is still there, didn't collapse yet. That's why when they arise, because of their wisdom, they are not deluded. They can be free. They don't suffer anymore. The stage of the Bodhisattva of the Mahayana, the great vehicle, must be reached to put an end to the birth and death of fluctuation. That's why only the great Bodhisattva, no more mundane mind, the true supramundane mind will arise. It's totally different type of mind. Then there are no more false thoughts. That's why this is the big difference. And this one can be realized, can be understood for the one who really have that type of cultivation. The birth and death of fluctuation is at the root of our birth and death. Why is it that we are born and then die? only because we have false thought. And where do the false thought come from? From ignorance. It is because there is ignorance that all false thoughts are produced. So that is the third level of emptiness of the Arahant, the particular Buddha, of analyzed Dhamma. The fourth one is the bodily Dhamma emptiness. The fourth kind of emptiness is cultivated by the conditioned enlightened one, the particular Buddhas, who have the bodily experience of the emptiness of Dhamma, because they realize the emptiness through the 12 link, condition, dependent origination, the conditioned enlightened one. These are the ones who realize the bodily Dhamma emptiness. Means they can see how their mind functions. And it's only condition arising, cause over. That's why it's empty. Not through analyze Dhamma, through actually seeing them, understanding them. Then the last one is true emptiness. The Bodhisattva cultivate the contemplation of emptiness of wonderful existence. When Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva was practicing the profound Prajna Paramita, he was cultivating the contemplation of the emptiness of wonderful Dhamma. When he illuminated the five skandhas and saw that they are all empty, he was cultivating at the level reached by profound Prajna, with the ability obtained from profound Prajna. So this is a very different type of emptiness. This type of emptiness is born of perfectional wisdom. Only the Bodhisattva and Buddhas, they are able to realize it. That's why the Heart Sutta is very unique. That's why just now the opening chanting. You remember? This mantra is a great mantra, supreme mantra, and very, very special mantra. So because of that, the Heart Sutta is very unique. And then, like it's mentioned in the final line, he said, that is why the mantra of Prajna Paramita was spoken, because all Buddhas of the three periods of time attained full enlightenment, or Anuttara Samyat Sambohi, through reliance on Prajna Paramita. Means perfection of Prajna. Therefore, know that Prajna Paramita is a great spiritual mantra, a great bright mantra, a supreme mantra, an unequal mantra. It can remove all suffering. It's genuine and not false. So this is the reason why this type of understanding is very different. It's very different from the normal one. Okay, we can stop here. 5 o'clock. I took extra half an hour. Okay, we stop here. Then, if you have the interest, you go back, you can read on. So now, today you learn something new. Something you have never learned before. Be very, very unhappy. Because if you say, Arahant and the Pacheka Buddha still got outflow, I tell you, you're trying to got argument for nothing. Don't worry about what is being spoken. You only need to know to develop your own understanding. You see, the Dhamma is like that. If you have not reached that type of cultivation, have an open mind. Don't try to comment. That's not. Otherwise, very dangerous. Because when I read this, even I think 23 years ago, I already knew what this thing is. So you must go and develop your cultivation to understand. Otherwise, very dangerous. You don't simply go and comment on something that you have not done before. Understand? What for? Just want to win an argument because we associate with the Theravada. You think you are Theravada. There is no such thing as a Theravada or Mahayana or Vajrayana. This form and mind is not you. It's only your thought. Your form and mind, the five aggregate, creating difference of views and opinion. So when you have this understanding, then hey no you hey no me where got Theravada Mahayana and Vajrayana. You only make use of this form and mind, the so-called human being, your vehicle, karmically conditional, for you to use, to cultivate, to understand, to develop the wisdom, so that when you truly understand, there is no more doubt. And everything can be understood very clearly. Okay? So, don't ever go and discuss or even try to argue with people, huh? Please. Because this can be very, very sensitive. Because a lot of people during the early day, they are very unhappy when they heard this, especially the Theravada side. So try to be sensitive. Try not to create unnecessary misunderstanding. Don't go out and get very excited. Wow, the Heart Sutta. You can quote Master Xuan Hua because he's no more around. You say, according to Master Xuan Hua, the commentary. But no point, understand? Huh? More important is we develop our own cultivation. We develop our own understanding. And whatever that can come about to develop this wisdom to benefit you, make use of it. Okay? Before you have this understanding, have an open mind. Later on, if you have the condition to go this way, the Bodhisattva way, you will come to understand. And all this is really what it is, I can tell you. This is what it is, actually. Because the mind is different. The mundane mind and the supramundane mind, they are totally different. The other mind think a lot. A lot of outflow. That's why they say the thought cannot stop. During the early day, when I was having some discussion with some of those, my peers, they were cultivating with me together, actually 20 over years ago. Maybe no need to mention that one. During the time of the Buddha, there is one lay person, Citta. You heard of Citta? You haven't heard of Citta? Oh, that was a very famous one. Citta is a lay person. He is one of the very, very wise one. And he, as a lay person, he heard from one of the Buddha's disciples, some Dhamma, and he straight away become a Sotapan. Then not long, become an Anagami. Third stage of sainthood. Then after a while, he meditates some more. His mind really enters cessation. He realized Nibbana. And the mind stopped. So during that time, the Buddha was teaching this special Dhamma. He was telling people, your mind can cease. The form and mind can totally cease. And the five aggregates cease. No more human being. A lot of those meditators, cultivators, they don't believe. He said, how can your mind cease? Even last time, I told you 20 years ago, when I discussed with my peers who meditate with me, I told them the mind can cease. He said, no way. You want to stop thinking also cannot. How can you cease the mind? Well, they cannot understand. Then this Citta, he got one teacher. Before he met the Buddha and his disciple, he got another teacher who he supported. He donated the way, place, everything. So this teacher actually was not so happy when Citta left him. Because after Citta came to know the Buddha, came to know the true Dhamma from the disciple and the Buddha, so he actually went to the Buddha more often. Then after a while, he decided to come back to the first teacher. So when he came back, this teacher was very happy. Wow, invited Citta in. Then he called all his disciples and his followers. He said, Citta is back, he said. Then he was so happy, he asked Citta, do you believe what the Buddha said, that the mind can stop? So Citta answered, I don't believe. Wow, he was so happy. He said, see, Citta also don't believe. Then after that, he said some more thing. Then Citta, like with courtesy, he tell this monk, he said, please, when I say I don't believe, doesn't mean it's not the truth. Citta said, Because I already realize the mind can cease. That's why I don't have to believe. It is the truth. Wow, this monk was very, very upset. He said, "Ha, cunning one." He said, "Chitta very cunning." He said, "Chitta said, no, I am telling you the truth. I don't have to believe anymore because I have realized it myself. The mind can cease because Chitta has realized the cessation of form and mind. The mundane mind really ceases, no more. That's why it can happen. So all this, when you cultivate, when you develop the meditation accordingly, you yourself can realize, can come to the understanding. So no need to like discuss or argue with people. Okay, with this, maybe we will have our second session, which is the meditation. So meditation, maybe nobody is new. Anybody who is totally new? Nobody, eh? Okay, then we can have a 5-minute break. Then after that, you come back. Then we start. We still got 45 minutes. No problem. Maybe I will just recollect for you all. So meditation is very simple if you understand. What the Buddha need you to do is first to train your mind to develop the heedfulness, the awareness within. Heedfulness means awareness without thought, silent, mindful, aware within. But initially, it's very difficult for human being to be without thought. So what you need to do is, you need to decondition your heedless thinking, born of your heedless living in your daily life. Because throughout the day, you experience a lot of sense or consciousness. You are conscious of a lot of things that you see, you hear, you smell, you come to perceive through your senses. Then you react to them, you think a lot. That's why you are like a creature of thought. Thought is delusion, egoic. That's why it will condition you into a lot of negativity and very difficult for you to develop the wisdom and the understanding. So the first thing you do is, like I always say, develop the spiritual faculty, the faith, the saddha, which is the faith, then the virya, which is the spiritual zeal, then the mindfulness, which is your awareness without thought. After these three, samadhi will come about if your sati stabilized. So the first training is to develop the mind in sati or mindfulness, means heedfulness. You need to decondition this thinking mind. That's why I start off by telling you, develop the puja, pay respect to develop the faith, the virya, then bow mindfully. So if you want to start with that, you can bow. Then after that, when you are more calm, when your faith is already there, you try to sit. When you sit, you have already trained your mind, you straight away sit. If you have yet to train your mind, you are still new, not stable yet, then what you can do is, you try to do the mind sweeping method. Mind sweeping method is very useful to decondition your thinking mind. You just relax body and mind, make sure backbone is straight, close your eye. Then after that, you feel. You don't think, you feel. You feel your forehead. Any tension, any tightness, any stress within, you relax. The moment you feel and relax, you decondition your mind from the heedless thinking. So you must do this more and more, more and more. Then you sweep down to your eye muscle, facial muscle. Then you radiate metta, loving kindness, like I normally teach you. Then after that, you can move to your shoulder, heart, stomach, abdomen, back to leg, then back to shoulder, and up all the way to your forehead. So through this mind sweeping method and metta, your mind state will be more calm, more conducive for meditation. Then when you are ready, you can relax your mind and meditate. If you have yet to train your mind to develop the stability of mindfulness, then you may need something to anchor your mind. And the Buddha has recommended the breathing. The breathing is very useful because as a human being, you always have to breathe to be alive. So the breath is always in the moment. So if you can be aware of this in and out breath, you are actually anchoring the mind in the present moment without thought. So anapanasati is mindfulness of in and out breath. This is the second level of training to make the mind peaceful and calm. So if you got problem with anapanasati, then I would suggest you just silence your mind. Just feel your breathing, like you feel your forehead, you just feel. Until the breathing and your awareness move together, the whole thing like synchronized. Then you can draw your breath a little bit initially. Because to be aware, maybe you need to draw the breathing a bit. Then as you draw, you develop the awareness. Then as you breathe out, you develop the awareness. Keep doing that until the mind is trained, stable and aware. You just relax everything, body and mind. Completely silence your mind and just feel your breathing. Breathing in, you are aware. Breathing out, you are aware, as per the Buddha's instruction. So this awareness will actually develop the peace and the calm mind. You can actually experience piti, or what they call rapture, spiritual calmness, spiritual joy. So rapture can happen. Then there's a lot of what they call calm state that can bring about a lot of happy state. So piti can actually be developed until it becomes paucity, tranquility. So all this you can train your mind to develop. So silence your mind, continue to be patient. Every time the mind wanders off, bring it back to the breathing. Wanders off, bring it back to the breathing. Then for those who already have this stabilized, then you can move on. You see, breathing in, experiencing the piti, the calmness. Then breathing in, calming the bodily formation. Means all of your thinking, your vibration, and your bodily formation, you can experience them, the calming effect. Then breathing out, experiencing the same. So through that awareness of mindfulness of in and out breath, your mind starts to experience a lot of things through awareness without thought. That is what anapanasati is. Then when your anapanasati is developed, when it's trained, the energy is very strong. It will enter your breath into your heart. And when it draws into your heart, it can open up your heart. And this is how it can speed up your transformation. So patiently relax your body and mind. Anchor it to the breathing and train your mind. For those who already can do it, you just continue to let this breathing or anapanasati go on until very stable. Then you can actually calm yourself down until your breathing like very subtle, little or no breathing. During that time, don't breathe. Silent everything. Just relax and silent. Then if you need to, stay at the heart. Just feel. Then if you are silent enough, there is a point within your heart, the gateway, it can open, you can detect it. Then your energy will melt inside and flow inside. It's just silent. Okay, I will let you continue the meditation. Then maybe in another 15 minutes time, I will ring the bell. Okay.
Okay, for those who still want to meditate, you can continue. For those who have not, slowly, mindfully come out of meditation. Whatever inner mindfulness and calmness that you have developed, you should try to develop this ability to stabilize them. You have to carry this trained mind that is in awareness or heedfulness into your daily life, your daily practice, or your daily cultivation. Because recently we had our retreat at this, what they call Champaka Buddhist Lodge. Our Kayana Mitas, we had the good condition to invite one of the Thai monk of the Thai forest tradition, Achana Chalo. He is still around. Tonight he will be at Subang Jaya Buddhist Association giving a talk. I think the topic is something quite useful to the lay life. He said Buddhist training, enabling inner self-confidence and self-esteem. So if you are free, you want to go, you can go. Achana Chalo, he has been a monk for 16 years, and he's a very good monk too. The Thai forest tradition is very good. So this is a very unique retreat, even though it was his first retreat, he told us. But it turned out very well, and he has done it very well too, because the condition was very conducive. And most of these people who went there, they are actually with me for quite a while. And because most of them have the understanding, so when they go for this type of retreat, it helped them a lot. Because it is during this period, you can have the continuity of mindfulness and continuity of mental training, bhavana. And at the same time, they have a lot of this, what they call very unique chanting, the Thai tradition, forest tradition chanting. The vibration are very good. Then they have also what they call the respect. Throughout the day, you cultivate a lot of wholesomeness, because when you are at the retreat, you do a lot of chanting, a lot of sitting, walking, meditation. Then you at the same time renew your precept. You also pay respect to the Buddha. You listen to the Dhamma. You straighten your view. You share merits. You transfer merit. Then you have this ability to do a lot of wholesomeness, like dana, radiating metta, sharing of understanding, and at the same time provide whatever service or support that you can to help each other. Then they maintain quietness, the silent mind, the noble silence. So when you are in such retreat for a continuity of a few days, for those who continue the full 7 days, is very good. So a lot of things they come to experience was very unique. Because when everybody is like that, when the condition is so beautiful, the group consciousness together with the support of the non-human, the cultivator, the monks and everybody who are there, because their minds are so sincere and so calm, it arises the condition for that place to be very conducive for meditation. It's like charged up. And that is also the place where a lot of people hold their retreat and meditation. So the difference between that type of retreat training and the normal one is that one is quite intense and useful. So when you can have that continuity of bhavana or mindfulness training, your mind develop very fast. The sadha, the spiritual faculty of faith, virya, spiritual zeal, and mindfulness develop very fast. And when they develop very fast, it creates the condition for most of them to inherit their past cultivation. It's like a lot of them able to enter into very good mind state. They are able to actually have very strong samadhi and awareness, sati. Then there was a lot of sharing, a lot of joy during the Q&A. Because every year there are one or two Dhamma sessions, then towards the end there is a Q&A where you can ask questions and report. What I came to know was most of them actually benefited a lot. That's why I told them, unless you are serious about meditation, you have to devote your time. You have to be very, very diligent. You have to cultivate over a period of time. Otherwise, you lose that momentum. Like I explained to them, if you only come to attend the session once a week or twice a week or even three times a week, every time is only 2 or 3 hours. Of course, you have a lot of wholesomeness during this session. But after you leave from here, about a week, you will be back to your heedless living. So that one will break your ability to be mindful. Unless you already have this ability to cultivate on your own. That's why I always remind you all, have a good religious routine at home, morning before you sleep and any time in the afternoon whenever you're free, you are with yourself. Meditate, silence your mind, develop the training of heedfulness. Then in between, cultivate the daily mindfulness. Unless you do that, the continuity is not there. So very difficult to develop the training of this mind to have the real sati or mindfulness that is stable enough to give rise to the good desired result. Appamada or heedfulness is very important. The reason why heedfulness and mindfulness is so important is because throughout the day, living beings think a lot of heedless thinking, heedless sense experience that arise and condition them into reaction. So all this trigger of a momentum of what they call thought process. The dependent origination, you know what is momentum is there? Yeah? How many of you don't know what is momentum? Momentum in physics is your mass times your velocity. If your car moves at certain velocity with that mass, then on impact, that momentum can be very, very strong. Understand not? Then if you rotate something, let's say you swing something around, there is a force. They call it the momentum. There is a centrifugal velocity. Mass times velocity is the momentum. So this momentum will actually carry through, understand? So your heedless and habitual thinking come from your momentum of thinking. Understand? When you think a lot, every day you think, it's like you do it habitually. Then like you maintain the momentum, that's why you think a lot. But every moment of awareness, sati, mindfulness, you break that momentum, understand? The moment you aware, that thought cease to carry over. Then that is like a break. When you break, what happened? The momentum stopped. Then you have to start again. So to start again, like you start your engine, very slow. But if you don't have moment of mindfulness to break, then your heedless thinking will condition you to continuously think and live your life that way. That's why the continuous mindfulness, if you can develop it, it can stop the whole process of heedless thinking. Then throughout the day, you are most of the time very calm and very peaceful, fully aware. Then that is the state of mind that will condition your good karmic inheritance to come back to you. Then together with all the sincere cultivator, practitioner, the non-humans and the participants,
you will have this condition to train your mind in a very different environment. Every time I went there, because I teach there for the last 6 years or so, that place, the energy is very different. Then every time I go there, I can feel it's very different. Then every day I am there over 2 or 3 times to just help out. The first 2 days was more or less full time because it was a weekend. So what I'm trying to explain to you is to explain to you the importance of this in-between cultivation, how to carry this training of the mind that you have, whether in a retreat or this short session, into your daily life. That is more important. So if you have a religious routine, then very easy, at least early morning when you wake up, before you sleep, and in between, whenever you are free, you just do your devotional practice and meditation. Means you do your puja. You pay respect to the Buddha or Kuan Yin or whatever that you have a lot of faith in. To develop the spiritual faculty of sadha, virya, then you pay respect mindfully. Then you can do some chanting. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Salutation to the Buddha. Then you can chant the salutation to the Dhamma, the Sangha, better. It's inside this chanting book. This Buddhist devotional book by K. Sri Dhammananda. Then after that, you can take refuge. Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami. So you take refuge, chant the salutation also can. Or you chant the salutation, then take refuge. Then you renew your precept. Then you have about 5-10 minutes of loving kindness meditation. Then you silence your mind for another 5-10 minutes. Total maybe half an hour. It will train your mind to be peaceful and calm before you start your day. Then before you sleep, you do again, you will have very good sleep. Then the advantage of metta is a lot. You are protected in many ways. Then you can train your mind and develop this continuity. Your mind will develop more and more of your what they call mindfulness training. Then the heedless thinking will start to slow down. Then in between, if you can continue to be mindful, to be aware of everything that happened, means we choose aware of all action and all movement in the present moment. Means you just have to be aware, understand? At home, in the office, while you are driving your car, you just have to maintain awareness of what is going on. Try not to think so much. Then that cultivation actually can help you a lot. And whenever you are free in the office or at home, you just sit on a couch or a chair. Just relax and silence your mind. Do more of the silencing of the mind. Just relax and silence. That is meditation. No thought. That is the real meditation. Relax and just aware, silent. Whatever the thought want you to think, you tell them, this is only sankhara. Sankhara is mental activity, consciousness. It come and it go. Now I want to meditate, I want to train the mind. I will attend to all the thinking after that. I will do the planning, the thinking, mindfully after that. So when you have more and more moments of daily mindfulness, your cultivation will change. Then every morning when you wake up, very important. First thing is aware. Aware of your posture on your bed. Whether you are lying down facing the ceiling or you are on your sideway, you just aware. Then the awareness will allow you to feel your whole body. Then after that, you aware of what is the thing that trigger you to come out and how you come out of your bed. Normally the first thing is your bladder, because you need to go to the toilet, answer nature's call. So the bladder is a condition. There is no such thing as intending to wake up, intending to walk. You find out yourself.
the bladder through tactile consciousness condition you to go toilet straight away, and that impulse, the intention, is the one that condition you to move and go to the toilet. And most of the time, human beings are not aware, heedless. So you quickly jump out of the bed, not even knowing how you turn, how you move, how you sit, how you stand up, how you walk, and how you open the door and move in, and how you answer nature's call. Do all those things. You're never aware. You only feel relief when you have done it. So that type of heedless living, you should try to reverse them. You see, the Buddha teach mindfulness of kaya, kaya nupassana. He start their training with anapanasati, the first category of practice. When you have trained your mind in anapanasati, it means you have awareness, heedfulness. You don't think, your mind is heedful. Then the second category of practice is the four posture. See? The four posture, first is lying down. Then how you sit up, how you stand up, then how you walk, and how you turn, and how you move, and how you answer nature's call, everything. So you can have that type of awareness and mindfulness means you are slowing down your thought, understand not? Your thinking. You anchor your mind to all your posture. Your posture is always in the moment. That's why you don't think. You're aware. Then that intention, tactile, condition you to come out of the bed. Then you will be aware of how you come out. Whether your hand move first or your body move first, and how you actually turn. That's why the blinking of your eye, your turning, your bending, your stretching, your movement, your standing up, all this you have awareness. Then how your hand move, then how you walk from there, then which hand go and open the doorknob, then how you push into the washroom, then how your leg walk in, and how you see the WC, if you need to open or whatever, your action or awareness. Then after that you turn, you sit, and how you actually remove your clothing, or whatever, to answer nature's call, you fully aware. Then how you actually do that nature's call, you will be fully aware. And amazingly, people do not understand. Last time, one yogi used to ask me, he said, "Brother Teo, answer nature's call so aware for what?" Because they cannot understand the significance. The main significance is to anchor your mind to your kaya, to be fully aware of the moment, understand? So that you are not heedlessly lost in thought, so that you are not deludedly, heedlessly lost in thought, so that the mind can decondition itself from the heedless thinking. You know what is happening. Later on when you brush your teeth, you will know. You don't even know how you take your toothbrush, how you put the toothpaste, how you brush. Because as you do that, you think of your office, you think of everything, the thought keep on coming. The moment you wake up, you already think that way. It means your thought precedes what you are doing. You are never with the moment. As you brush, a lot of thought going on. That's why you never with the moment. But when your mind is silent, you're fully aware of the movement, the sensation or whatever. You don't need to use your thought to go and feel all these things. You're just silent. When you are silent, the awareness is there. Understand or not? You don't try to be aware. You're just silent. And you just do. Your awareness will be there. The mind that is silent will be aware by itself. Don't try to be aware. So, as you train more and more, if you can be mindful in your house, then you learn how to be mindful when you go out and drive your car. I still remember the early day training. How I go downstairs and take my car key. I fully aware. Where my car key I take. Then how I bring it out. And how I take my belonging, the bag or whatever. Then how I open the door. Then how I move out, open the gate. How I move out and lock the gate. Then how I on the car alarm or whatever to open the car, the lock. Then how my hand go to the door, how it pull,
and how I went in and sit fully aware, how I put the ignition into the car key into the ignition, fully aware. Then how I turn. Then how the engine sound through the hearing conscious, how it arises. Then whether the car engine is normal or not, you will understand because there is clarity. Yeah. Then I will look at the mirror. Then I adjust whatever, mindful. Then when I move, the hand fully aware. The awareness of what I am doing through the driving, fully aware. And that clarity is very beautiful, very different. Very little or no thought. Then finally, like, no need to think. You just aware. So that mind can be trained in this way. And when you do it, the daily mindfulness will actually complement your cultivation. Then after you have this daily mindfulness, I can tell you, you no need to worry about sitting. You come in, you just sit, you become very still and very quiet, very peaceful, very fast. Because the heedless thinking is so much less. Then very easy to be silent, very easy to be aware. And your meditation really take off. So this is the part I want to share with you all. What's the time now? Oh, 6 o'clock. Okay, sorry about the session. I cannot give you Q&A because I overuse your time for the Heart Sutta. So we will end because there is a talk by Acharya Chalo. I have to be there, I think. Because Sui An wrote me an email. He said, if I can, he asked me to help introduce Achan. I said, should be no problem. But he also got the what they call Achan's biodata. So I think they can also introduce him, no problem. We see how it goes. But I did tell Achan I will be there. And I did tell some of the Dharma friends I will be there. So we will do our usual sharing of merit, transfer of merit. Then we end. Okay, sharing of the merits with devas. Akasata ca bumata devanaga mahindika punyang tangan moditwa jirang rakantu lokasasana. May all beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty power, share these merits and may they long protect the dispensation. Itta vata ca amehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya. May all beings share these merits which we have thus acquired and may all devas rejoice and may it contribute greatly to their well-being and happiness. Transfer merits to departed one. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Let this marriage accrue to our departed relatives and may they all do be well and happy. Okay, we will do the invocation of blessing for the nation. Devo vasatukalena sasa sampatihito ca fito bhavatu loko ca raja bhavatu dhammiko. May the rain fall in due season and may there be a rich and good harvest and may the world be prosperous and peaceful always. And may the government of the day, the king and the ruler, be righteous. Okay, the last one is making aspiration. Itmina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo otu yava nivana pattiya. By the grace of this merit that we have thus acquired, may we never follow the foolish, but only the wise and the enlightened one until Nibbana is realized. Sadhu,
Sadhu, sadhu.
Okay, pay respect to the Buddha, Kuan Yin, and all the worthy ones.